Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to Stop Hammer Time. And it's not a mathematically safe Stop Hammer Time, but it's a fairly safe Stop Hammer Time, but not mathematically. So if you think you're safe, we're not safe. Just when you think you're safe, you might not be safe mathematically. Like someone in Friday the 13th, who you think you're mathematically safe because Jason's been killed, but you're not actually strictly mathematically safe because he might come at you with something mathematical. So it's like that. So it is quite safe, though. There was a feeling of euphoria at the end of the game, like we were safe. Here to talk in euphoric terms about our potential safety, though not mathematical safety, is, as always, Jim Grant.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Jim.
I normally say good evening, don't I? In fact, for years I've been saying good evening.
Yeah.
This is the only time we've ever done it.
We're doing it in the day.
It's really weird. Daylight. It's weird.
Yeah, stuff on the washing line, dogs running around in the street, kids playing with hoops. Yeah. People washing their steps. Yeah. Also with us this week, one of our favourite guests of the podcast. He is a journalist, broadcaster, and writer, Sam Delaney.
Hello. I won't be time of day specific because people could be listening to this at any time of day.
That's a good point. As soon as I said good afternoon, I realised that could have been the case and I could have just carried on with my tradition and nobody would have been any the wiser.
Yeah, Jim.
I feel as though I've given the game away.
We're not going out on the world service.
No.
And even if we were, that again would make setting the time stupid because it could be any time of day around the world.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what is, I'd like to start the show by asking you both, what is time anyway?
What is time?
An absurd and I think controlling fascistic notion created, I believe, Jim will be able to confirm or deny this, by the Egyptians. And I'm not happy about it and I wish it didn't exist.
No. David Moyes doesn't like time. He prefers a time before time. Time to him is a newfangled thing that he doesn't like very much, and he'd much rather have the old system.
In Glasgow growing up, we didn't have the luxury of time.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. No, you just used to be, you know, like before time, you just used to wake up and be grateful that the sun was there and go, oh, it's back. It's back. And you didn't just assume it was going to be back.
What I resent the most is like people saying, do you want to meet up? And you go, yeah, fine. And they go, right, make sure you're fucking there when the sun is at this exact spot in the sky. You go, why? What difference does it make? Because that's when I want you to be there. And if not, there'll be consequences.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's just like, why are you a fucking control freak?
Absolutely. But
it was invented by a control freak.
I think it was, I think it was, if you didn't have it, you wouldn't have a lot of battles and crucifixions because they wouldn't know when to hold it. You know, they just go, let's meet, and when the time feels right, let's crucify someone or have a war. You know, so it's responsible.
Also, if you think of it as well, people are in a hurry because of time exists. So, like, some guy thinks it's say like you're Alexander the Great, for example, and you think, well, I have to conquer a certain number of countries before I hit this age. I need a legacy and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
That's all the consequence of time. If people weren't aware of the passage of time, if it didn't exist, then people wouldn't be in such a hurry to fucking achieve all of these things that often require them to shit on other people, sometimes killing other people in their thousands, right?
Exactly.
In their thousands. If time didn't exist, would Hitler have done all the things he did? I don't know.
That is right. That's right. So what we're saying essentially is throw your watches away. Just hurl them. If you're driving your car or in your houses this sunny afternoon, open the window, throw your watch into the street.
You know what? I don't even call it a watch. I call it a handcuff because it constrains me and it's an affront to my freedom.
Yeah. Absolutely stupid watch. Someone else who appeared to be having a deep philosophical thought was David De Gea at the weekend, who turned around and gazed accusingly at the surface of this planet we live on, having let a goal in. He went, stupid surface of the planet.
Yeah.
Which when I'm walking along in the street, I trip over a lot in the street and nothing's tripped me over. And because there might be people looking at me, I do that. I turn around and sometimes there's a sort of brief monologue. I gaze accusingly at the planet's surface and say, you did this to me, planet surface. Mm. You did that. You are to blame. I am at war with you. I am at war with the planet that I live on. And David De Gea was like that. He seemed to blame the Earth for his mistake in that game when something strange just happened to his hands. His hands became gas.
He's a flat earther, and he didn't take into account the curvature of the surface.
That's right. He's a flat earther, and he's paid the price there. For his loony conspiracy theories.
What a fool.
Yeah.
Well, the joke's on him.
Wait, it's one of the first rules of football. I know that David Moyes practices, is it never hire a flat earther to play between the sticks.
No.
Because it will backfire.
No, absolutely. Bruce Grobbelaar may have been a flat earther because he was a bit mad.
That was his defence in court, at least.
Yeah.
Well, you see, Your Honour, I didn't let through. I know it looks like I let through my hands on purpose, but what you got to understand is I was going for a flat earth phase at the time.
Yeah. I was gazing at the horizon and I was momentarily distracted and the ball went past me. But it was a celebratory mood at the end of the match and was. It was considered a good game, wasn't it? And in fact, the second half was very good, wasn't it? We weren't very good in the first half, but we scored a goal in the first half.
I was so celebratory. I rewatched the game in full, which is not something I do very often. I think we were good in the first half with the ball, but gave them, as so often is the case, too much respect. We sat off them a bit. Did that kind of, we're sort of pressing, but we're not really pressing. And occasionally, you know, the one person who's decided, especially sort of turns around and wonders where everybody is and waves at them. Pekesi does that quite a lot, doesn't he? You know, where are we? Like sort of, you know, you've headed off in one direction and everybody else has gone in a different direction. That kind of slightly embarrassed, half-arsed pressing thing.
Yeah.
But much better on the front foot, much better with and without the ball in the second half, I agree.
It seemed like what happened after we scored that incredibly lucky goal was that rather than it giving, you know, putting a spring in our step, Manchester United just didn't seem able to up their game. Do you know what I mean? If when that goal had gone in, you know, Manchester United was suddenly full of a kind of sense of injustice, so they really kind of pulled their socks up and went for it. We could have been in trouble, but they kind of didn't. And we were like, oh, okay, maybe if we try a bit harder, we'll score another one. And because it sort of happened about halfway through the first half, and I think, you know, before that, it was things were a bit nervy for us, I think. We didn't look like particularly, you know, endangering their goal, and we didn't seem to be, you know, able to get the ball off them much.
We had a great three or four minutes. We flew at them.
I actually think, in my opinion, is a bit different to your both of yours. I think it was the best performance of the season. In as much as you got to look at who it came against, right? Manchester United. Okay, not the Manchester United of old, but still a seriously good team, packed with exceptional players. I don't think Moyes had. He's certainly never beaten United. He hadn't beaten United since he left there. So that's quite a long time ago, right? We've had a bad recent record against them. He's repeatedly shown them and every other top six club we've played way too much respect. I fully expected, I went to Stadium. I wasn't in the mood to go. I found it an inconvenient time of the weekend to attend the game. I arrived at Stadium fully expecting a lackluster display in which, again, we showed them too much respect. And they beat us sort of fairly easily at a canter. I was in a negative state of mind. By the end of the game, I couldn't have been feeling more different. I thought that every one of the 11 players played really well. I thought that we limited them in the first half to a lot of shots from outside the area, which suits me fine. Mm. I agree that we pressed much harder against City, because City are really the best football team in the world, right? And so we really went for it. And then it was sort of like, well, now we're at home against a slightly less good team from Manchester, so let's just press, but not quite as hard. It's like, if you work as hard against this lot as you did against Man City, we might actually get a result, because this lot aren't quite as good as Man City. It seems strange. So that's the only thing that I do think, seemed a little bit off. But they were... a lot of shots were coming in from outside the area, and it was a sense of, okay, fine, they can do that all day. We're happy for them to take pop shots from there. And I thought every player worked really hard, really hard. There were no doubts, as there had been in all season, really, in numerous games, that the players weren't really making enough of an effort, or that, camaraderie, team spirit, work ethic were running low. It looked like a team again. They were working for each other. There was some lovely flourishes of play. And second half, I think we could have won it 3-4-0 and it wouldn't have been flattering. We had the ball in the net another two times. We should have had a penalty. Antonio was back almost to his best. Thought he played absolutely brilliantly. For me, Paqueta, with each passing game at the moment, looks better. But I think we know Rice is leaving in the summer. I think we've got his replacement.
Yeah, me too.
I would be very surprised if we could sign someone better than Paqueta. Yeah, came out as a rhyme, which I wasn't planning. But I just think he's the guy. Of course, he's not exactly the same as Rice. Of course, he's not. They're different players. However, there are some similarities. They're both kind of all-round midfielders. They both are extremely hardworking. They get around all over the midfield. They can both run with the ball. Rice is better running with the ball at his feet because he's quicker. But there was one point in the game where I was sitting with my mate thinking, I can't see a flaw in this bloke. Okay. Mm. And he's only going to get better next year. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, and you're looking at him and I can't see where the gap in his game is. But there was a point where he got played through in the second half quite late. And I think, Jim, you'll remember this if you rewatch the game. He had a chance to break. And it was the sort of position that you're used to seeing Bowen or Antonio get the ball and just fucking tear away. And then that was when I realized, he doesn't have much pace. Doesn't have much pace on the ball. Fine. That's I can live with that. Rice, he can't do those buccaneering Rice-style runs. But, I mean, then again, his goal against Liverpool did involve him charging back. And for me, that's our goal of the season right there.
Oh, yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
But everyone played well. Benrahma, who I've been getting very frustrated with over the last few months. It was that classic thing where me and my mate were sitting there slagging him off, going, oh, he's had his chance. We've got to upgrade the left. We have to upgrade the left. And so he's never quite going to be the game changer we need him to be. And, of course, as we were saying all of this, he scores the goal.
I mean, I think the point you're making still hold true, though, about Benrahma. I think on balance, he is... he flatters to deceive.
He's got good stats. He's got good stats this season, and he had good stats last season. but can we do better?
Oh, you know, I think, you know, the sort of lack of goals this season, apart from, you know, ones from set pieces recently, I think is a result of, like, if you've got a front three of Benrahma, Antonio and Bowen, one of those players has got to be better than that, than they are, you know?
Yeah.
But my, I think that least about Bowen, who I think is really good, but I think, you know, one of the other two players has got to be just a better footballer to be in, you know, the Premier League.
You need someone like Bowen who can be a game changer in tight games. He's got the pace. Yeah. He's got the huge amount of confidence, Bowen. When he gets the ball in tight positions, he never does that thing of shitting himself and releasing it just to get rid of it. Or he'll always do the ambitious thing. And so when he loses the ball, you don't mind. Because he always takes the ball that one step further than you think he's got a right to. And it doesn't always come off, but I just love the way he goes through it. And he always gets a shot away when he wants to. You can see it's coming, and they don't seem to be able to stop him because he doesn't need much backlift. All of those things, that he is a real danger man that I think probably opposition managers, he's the key threat they look at.
Yeah, definitely.
I think Antonio's playing great, but we've known, you know, for a while that surely there can be. I think at the moment, he's absolutely, even if Scamacca was fit, you know, it's ironic. For all these years, we said, how can we get by just with one striker? We have since signed two of the most expensive strikers in our history. And yet, even if they're all fit, Antonio would still quite rightly be first pick.
Yeah, probably. You know, well, you would.
I would definitely say that. I mean, Scamacca, again, you know, he hasn't really had a chance to fully prove his worth, but he wasn't doing what Antonio does. And I look at Moyes and I think, listen, you know how you want to play. You know it failed with Haller, right? You've got a very clear sense of what you want your centre-forward to do in this formation. So you've gone out and you've signed not one, but two hugely expensive strikers, one of whom is the best-paid player in the history of the club, I believe, right, in Ings, right? And neither of them can play the role. It doesn't mean they're shit. They're both good players. No. But neither of them can play the role you require them to play. And yet you sign them both.
Yeah.
You sign them both. I mean, that is infuriating for the management and the fans, for the club owners.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, Ings felt like, one of those kind of Sully Sullivans. He's a footballer I've heard of kind of specials, really. I don't think he's being paid as much as Paquetá, by the way. I'm pretty certain of that.
I heard he was the best paid player at the club. That's what's been reported.
I think that's Paquetá, definitely.
Okay.
And they want to make Rice, obviously, the best, but he's not signing the contract. I mean, going back to Paquetá and Rice, I do agree. I think they gradually, that they have complementary skills, in fact, don't they? Paquetá slightly better in the final third, picking a pass, slightly better at kind of seeing gaps and playing angles and things. Rice, as you say, driving with the ball, but also defensively, better, I think. But they're beginning to work really well and feed off each other.
Oh, what a midfield. It's such a shame it's only kind of had these first few months with each other, because it will be broken up. Yeah.
It is. It is really sad to think that, because it's just now they're just getting going, and it would be a mouth-watering prospect, really, especially if we could add just one more bit of quality, just an upgrade on. I love Souček and he's been a great club servant, but just a little bit more quality on the ball.
To replace
as a three, and my goodness me, we with the same amount of kind of legs and energy, then we would have one of the best
midfields out
by those top two
absolutely.
Or three.
I could see Rice and Paquetá very comfortably being a Champions League midfield at another club together for many years. You know, I mean, Rice, I think we all agree, could breeze into any team in the world, including Manchester City's. I know. No, obviously Rodri's a great player and he's more or less same position. But, you know, Rice is capable of playing in any team. Paquetá, I think, is almost at that level now. I mean, certainly he could get to that level. And the other thing he has that Rice doesn't have is he's got a trick, which is more and more rare in modern football, because that sort of stuff is ironed out of young players. But he's still got a trick, and you will see it once or twice a game. What's nice is he doesn't do it to show off. He does it when he has to. There was a couple of moments against Manchester United where he had to pull out a little nutmeg or a backflip because he had three men around him. So he just did it.
It was
expedient. It wasn't indulgent.
No, he's very good at coming up with the ball, isn't he? He's got kind of Joe Cole. Joe Cole had a kind of like great ability when he had really closely attended by like David Batty and Gareth Barry or someone like that, of just coming up with the ball when he's got no right to. And Paqueta's very good at that. I mean, I think, you know, like that's the great thing about Paqueta is that I think he was bought for the wrong reasons. It was thought that he was going to be a kind of a number 10. He was going to be like King Cladsey or sort of Canio or Shaqiri, someone who's really influences a game. And he's not really like that because he's, you know, for Brazil, he's side by side with Casemiro and you know, he works in a unit as part of a team. He's not really going to change things on his own. But it sort of felt more like he needs to have more of the pitch in front of him, so play deeper rather than a playmaker role, which made him a possible Suchek upgrade. You're sort of thinking of him as a Suchek upgrade. But the more you see of him, you're absolutely right. You kind of go, this is our Rice replacement, you know, and then someone playing alongside him and finding, you know, again, you know, if someone new comes in, you know, if it's Calvin Phillips or someone like that, they'll have to kind of find their new working relationship, because it took Suchek and Rice a while to find out how it worked. You know, for England, Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice clicked in a way that was very fortunate, very instinctive, because it was a very unusual relationship. You know, they job shared kind of two jobs between them, but a little bit of the other job. You know, they were very good at complementing each other. So, you know, we'll have to find someone and they might take a little while to click. But
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, it might be Calvin Phillips. Might be Calvin Phillips, who's not been able to get a look in at Manchester City. And the club have gone for him before, so you never know. I'd like to think we could identify, you know, a younger player.
Yeah.
But I mean, Flynn Downs could be that. But for me, I think, you know, Flynn Downs has shown every quality that you'd be looking for anyway. If you were looking to sign someone, I mean, I don't know if you saw Josh Cullen has just been named Fans Player of the Season and Players Player of the Season at Burnley in a side that has absolutely stormed the Championship. They pissed it. Josh Cullen's their Player of the Season. Now, it seems like only yesterday we had him, and much like Connor Coventry and now Flynn Downs, he was kind of on the bench, floating around. They didn't really fancy him. Mm. But he's coming to play in the Premier League next season in a team that looks seriously good, and he's their number one player.
And he's a latter-day Matt Holland, isn't he?
He is, And I look at Flynn Downs, and I think he just needs game time, because when you see him play, he's always played well. And he's the only thing he needs to get better is more time on the pitch. Do you know what I mean? I would hope that, like, okay, we're going to get, what, 120 million, we hope, for Declan Rice. The nice thing is that what we don't necessarily have to do, and I hope we don't do, is go and spend, you know, 60% of that on a replacement in midfield. Because however much you spend, you're not going to get anyone who's like Declan Rice. It's not possible.
What? No.
When you've already got Paqueta and Downs... Yeah. And Suchek, you know, like, you don't necessarily, you might be looking at other positions instead that need strengthening.
Yeah, definitely.
that, I mean, you're obviously referring to that. I mean, that via Sky, the club seemed to have made that statement about accepting offers, didn't they? About 100. I mean, how are you reading that? Because in many ways, I mean, we know, don't we? You know, he's a father now, isn't he? And very much London orientated. We think he doesn't want to move outside of London. They've said it has to be an offer. They said from a Champions League club, didn't they? Well, that rules out Chelsea now, of course.
Yeah.
And rules in only Arsenal on that.
Yeah, I think he's. I think he's going to Arsenal, isn't he? Yeah. I think.
But they're not going to pay 120 million for Rice. They simply. I read that as a sort of challenging, semi hands off statement. Because I don't think anybody's going to pay that kind of money for him.
The only thing is, there's one more year, and then after that, he can go for nothing. And there's a question: do we want him there if he doesn't? If he says, "Listen, I put my time in. Hopefully, he can end his. You know, he can end the season by lifting the first trophy we've won since 1980, right? And then he can go. I've done my bit here. I'll always love the club. I'm off to play in Champions League.
He might well do that.
If Sullivan says no, you're staying, like the situation happened with Kane at Tottenham.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, do you want him here disgruntled if he feels like now's the time?
I don't think he would be. I mean, it doesn't come across as that kind of personality, really. And you would hope that proper, sensible conversations are being had about this. The club has an option to extend the contract for another year. So technically, he's got two more years. I don't know the legal ins and outs of those deals where there's an option to extend or whether they can be challenged or whatever. But I don't know. He's still young, still only about 24. If we do win the trophy, and he is starting to bed in with this relationship with a partnership with Paqueta, the big offers don't come in, it might be that he thinks, well, you know, my best option, I've got Europa League football, I'm playing with a top class midfielder. You know, the club might do some useful business in the areas that we need it over the summer. I can't imagine we're going to be with Aguerd settling in, Kehr beginning to look like the kind of player who could earn international caps for Germany, Cornet to come through. You know, in a sense, there's going to be a kind of a reboot, isn't there, in the summer anyway?
Part of that,
you know, my best bet is staying.
Part of that reboot could be, you know, who's going to be manager next year? You know,
Indeed.
Do you think that... you know, I mean, obviously, this European adventure has got to play out, and that might make a big sort of part of that decision happen. But, you know, I think it's fairly safe to assume that we'll still be in the Premiership next year. And that means that, you know, decision on what to do about Moyes is, you know, fast approaching. And they have to sort of think about it now. There was that sort of recent thing where Karen Brady in her newspaper column was sort of being weirdly disproportionately praising of the Celtic manager, Ange Postecoglou, or however you say his name, you know, for no apparent reason at all. She just devoted the best part of a column to a Scottish football club winning its division and how well the manager did. And it seemed, a rather strange kind of, you know, that there was perhaps some kind of reason for her doing that. You know,
I saw that bloke the other day being a knob in a press conference. Did you see that?
No,
I'd heard his name like rumored a few times about, you know, oh, he could be a target for West Ham, but I didn't know much about him. And I just saw a clip of him where he's just got the ump, like. He's in a press conference and he started answering a question and one of the members of the press has gone, sorry to interrupt, can you just speak a little bit more into the mic because we can't hear, we won't be able to record it. And he's going, listen, don't muck me about. We all want to get this over and done with as quickly as possible. So just ask me the question, let me answer and stop being pedantic, right? And the guy's going, right. Whoa, all right. And then he's going, back to your question, and he starts re-answering it again. And then he stops and goes, oh, sorry, can everyone hear me? Right. And I'm like, fucking hell, is this the geezer they're going to hire? It's like fucking Sam Allardyce times 10.
Yeah.
Really confrontational one. Yes, exactly. What's he say? Are you an ostrich?
Yeah.
Are you an ostrich? Fucking great. I mean, it is entertaining to have a manager who's a natter, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you, Sam, where do you stand on the Moyes debate?
I think that I would like to see a different manager given a go with this team, because I think that we've probably reached our maximum either way, and that probably happened last season or season before. So I just don't know whether it's a good long-term fit, but I think that if we, you know, if we finish in a respectable position now and we win the Europa, then I just think it's going to be extremely difficult for them to... the conference. It's going to be difficult for them to let him go. But, you know, that's still a big if. We're kind of, a lot of fans are like talking about, well, you know, we're going to win the conference. Like, well, you know, we've got a very hard semi-final and then
a
final to negotiate. So I think that's difficult. The other thing that maybe is talked about less that I have no evidence for, I haven't heard any rumours, but I just have a little bit of a suspicion is, could he walk, right? Because... like he's quite old. He's been doing this a long time. This season would have been quite a struggle for him putting up with the amount of like hostility from the fans. He clearly, from some of the things he said, you know, feels pretty put out by that because the way he sees it, understandably, I would advise him, fucking hell, I've brought you the best seasons that you've had in decades. And now the first sign of trouble and you're all really quick to say Moyes out. You know, so maybe there's not the connection with the fans that he might have enjoyed at Everton that got him through similar spells at Everton, because he did have the odd season where they fought relegation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Followed by seasons where they'd get in the top six. So, but he had a bond with them that I think he hasn't managed to establish with us. And he he's not from London. You know, his family aren't down here. And he lost Alan Irving, who by all accounts is his like absolute, you know, they're more or less, it's a Clough and what's his name situation. They more or less came as a double act.
Yeah.
So he's been getting by without Irving now for two seasons, but it's obviously had an impact. And I just wonder whether or not, I don't know how long's left on his contract, but if there's a compromise that can be come to, I don't rule out him going, do you know what? Especially if he wins the cup, because he wins the trophy. He delivers us this, and then his record, his legacy stands. He got West Ham into Europe three seasons running, right?
Yeah.
And won us our first trophy since 1980, yeah? So that is, in any club, that's decent. In West Ham, that's a mega, like, legacy. He's got claim. Off the back of that, he's got a claim to be our best manager ever. Do you know what I mean?
Won
a trophy and three European qualifications, right? And then he goes... but I can see it's not likely. This is West Ham we're talking about. I don't think this is going to go much further. I get to go back up north. Maybe, you know, maybe he ends up at Celtic. Maybe he ends up taking the Scotland job. I don't know. Yeah. But I did listen to that interview he did on Diary of a CEO earlier this year, which I thought was a misstep in that, because at the time we were really deep in the shit. And I thought, what's he doing this for? And he was kind of like, no, I've been doing this a long time. And yeah, I'll do things that the fans might not like or people don't like. He goes, but I don't care anymore. He goes, I don't care if I get sacked or don't get sacked. I don't get sacked in the end anyway. I'm just going to do things my way. He sort of had this kind of, you know, that sort of a fatalism that you get with old age, that he's sort of thinking, I've been around the block a few times. So it's only a feeling, and I've got nothing to support it. But I wouldn't be that surprised if he won the cup and then walked away. Do you know what I mean? Not walked away with nothing, but goes to Sullivan and Brady and says, listen, I don't expect a full payout, but I'm not going to walk away for nothing. Let's just come to an agreement here, and then it can be seamless and we can say it's by mutual consent.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, managers must sort of develop quite a kind of pragmatic and thick-skinned approach now, because their jobs are so precarious now. When you see sort of Tuchel going after seven games this season, and I think they, you know, you see managers serially performing quite badly who seem to be able to walk back into a job. You know, Allardyce has just... You know, now that he has finally taken a team down with West Bromwich Albion a few years ago and not done particularly well with Everton before that, he's still bought in as a kind of, you know, Red Adair type last throw of the dice. And there's like no evidence that's particularly his game. He might just, you know, fire a rocket up the arses of his central defenders, but I don't think there's anything tactically he's going to really do. But those jobs are sort of all out there. If they want to, they can come back into jobs and like, you know, like you say, sort of walking away with, you know, actually quite a sort of good record in the last few years is probably a very wise thing to do. You know, take a year off and then, like you say, there's jobs in Scotland, there's the national job in Scotland. There's a lot of things he could do. They talked a bit about that Marco Silva guy, didn't they? The guy at Fulham. He's been mentioned as a sort
of possible. And so is Brendan Rodgers.
Graham Potter.
Would he be inspired to... Well, I think, you know, in a funny sort of way, he's less attractive prospect now than he was a year ago, isn't he? Because, you know, especially as the guy who replaced him at Brighton seems to be even better, doesn't he?
Well, I think the other feeling that I heard is what the West Ham board thought when they were looking at Potter when he got the sack. They were like, there's a feeling amongst people in football that Brighton, the reason that Potter did well and now this guy's done well, is that Brighton's recruitment is so incredible, which is based on the same, as I understand it, it's based on the same statistical analysis system that only one other club have, which is Brentford. And these two clubs are both owned by guys who used to be partners in some sort of betting firm that had this. Anyway, so both those clubs. So in a way, it makes the managers seem less credible because they're saying, well, but you know, Potter benefited from having these incredible players brought out of nowhere into the team. And that's why the follow-up manager has just walked in and the success has just continued, you know, put him in a different context at Chelsea with all these other players who haven't been recruited with the same skill, just with money, and he couldn't handle it. And that's why I think they were more interested in Rodgers, which, to be honest, I would be as well. I know Brendan Rodgers is now getting the whiff of one of these old kind of, war horses on the managerial carousel. But the difference between him and Moyes is that he is, he's always been an extremely attacking, progressive and attractive football kind of manager.
Is he?
I think so.
Okay. I'm not convinced by that at all.
He wouldn't be my first choice, but I wouldn't be disgruntled. I'm more thinking I don't know enough about managers who are out there. Like I say, I don't know about the Celtic bloke. I love the idea of us identifying the next young, you know, sort of continental manager who can come with fresh ideas.
That would be great. But are they out there looking for that manager? Categorically.
Unlikely.
That's my concern is that I agree with you about it feels, particularly actually if he's kept us up, if we win the trophy, that will feel like we can shake hands and say goodbye to Moyes. He can leave vindicated with his head held high. We can say thank you very much for three good years and a couple of fantastic years. But I'd accept all that if I was certain that the plan, the strategic thinking, was to bring in a manager like you've just described. You know, young, progressive. You know, at the cutting edge of tactical thinking and coaching, and we were going to be playing the kind of football that I think we all want us to see playing on the front foot. You know, pacey. Aggressive, you know, progressive football. But do you think I just have no faith in the people you know, people have been attacked Moyes for being a dinosaur, or whatever. I think that's all been very unfair. I think the real dinosaurs are the people who run the club, to be honest. And I don't have faith in them to pick. I think, you know, they got rid of Moyes for a kind of shinier object, didn't they? With Pellegrini,
and
they sort of had to eat humble pie over that. They have no track record of they got lucky with Moyes, I think.
Oh, I think they got Moyes because he was the only guy available.
Job. His career was in a bit of a in the doldrums, wasn't it? After some bad choices, going to, you know, I thought he was unlucky. I thought he was shoddily treated at Man United, to be honest. Clearly,
if it was now, a manager with the record he had at Manchester United would be very comfortable in their job today. Do you know what I mean? Because he was being compared to what Ferguson had achieved. Whereas now you go into that job and he would be given a good 3 years on that form to build it.
Yeah.
He did pretty much as well. I think he did better than Van Gaal, who followed him, about as good as Solskjaer after that. I think he sort of won something like 55% of his games at Man U and was like, fine. They just the fans wanted to win the championship again because they'd won it the previous year. Yeah, I mean, I just don't know what managers do, really. It does seem that Moyes has been sort of demonstrating this sort of inflexibility that you worry about. I mean, that's exactly what Allardyce sort of showed, was this sort of inflexibility at the end. And, you know, you wonder whether it's possible for, you know, the board and him to sit down and have a kind of mature conversation where they go, can you see what the problems were this season? Yeah. Can you identify them? And do you think you can rectify them? Other than going, oh, well, we'll just go again next year and see if it happens again, you know. And I don't know if they're capable of sitting, having a conversation like that with a manager, or there's just, because there seems to be just this notion that managers can't change, you know, can't adapt. And certainly in certain cases, I think, you know, Allardyce, because he has this notion that he is incredibly sophisticated and clever, I'm as good as Pep, all that stuff, is really never going to change because he thinks he is, you know, hugely versatile and adaptable and stuff like that, and he isn't. You'd think that sort of, you know, managers, if they... I think it is that thing that they're just happy to just leave. If, you know, managers have two-year lifespans now at a lot of big clubs, and they just go, well, you know, they'll probably just get rid of me anyway in a year or two.
Just reading, Paolo Fonseca is the name. Manager of Lille. And actually, there's a story just today in The Sun and various other sources. Saying that, you know, he's sort of thrown his hat in the ring. That's probably that. It reads like a story that's been placed by his own agent, just to sort of maybe speed things up with Lille, his current club.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Also, the same story mentions Xavi Alonso at Bayer Leverkusen, which I think feels a bit far-fetched. It feels far-fetched. But having said that, you know, look, what we probably would need, I would say, I do think that this is an era in which younger managers tend to succeed because there is a generation of managers who have now lost touch with the players, the language that the players speak, the way they think, their culture. You know, a young manager sometimes just has that connection. Of course, people can disprove that and say, well, what about Roy Hodgson's doing so well at Palace? On the whole, I like the idea. A club the size of West Ham as well, i.e. we are not Real Madrid, you know, or Manchester City, where there are huge fucking world-class players who kind of require a huge world-class name manager in order to feel motivated. Do you know what I mean? It's hard. I mean, I read Rio Ferdinand's book once, and he was very open about the fact that these players who'd won the lot, they'd won multiple leagues, Champions Leagues, and had thousands of international caps between them. They found they struggled to respond to David Moyes, who'd come in from Everton, having never won a trophy. There was a feeling that how could he possibly know more than us with everything that we've achieved?
Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of true.
You can see that, you know. So that's at those level clubs. Obviously, we're not that level club. I do think that young managers with fresh ideas, you know, can sort of invigorate a squad of young players, you know.
I completely agree with that. I just feel that's not what we'll get if we get rid of Moyes. You know, we'll get something, you know, we'll get a kind of safe pair of hands option. And of course, that's what he is in many ways. You know, I think you're right, Phil. I think, you know, that idea of you'd want that exactly that conversation to be going on, because I mean, he did say that he was trying to turn the team into a more possession-based team. You could see that the thinking, if any, behind the sort of signing those nine players in the summer was to do with trying to develop the team in a more possession-based way, with Agued being able to play out from the back, Kehrer, Agued, you know, Paqueta, those kinds of signings, and also the people they were chasing and didn't get. And I think the first part of the season was a shit show, and we had injuries, players struggling to get up to speed with the pace of the Premier League, have not played in it before. A bit of bad luck, some fucking awful VAR decisions going against us.
Yeah. And some players not hitting the ground running as well. Yeah. You know, I mean, Bowen, Soufal, and Souček.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you just go back to that game against Forest, you know, where we utterly. I mean, the second half against Forest was one of our best performances in the season. We absolutely battered those bastards and could easily have come away 5-1 winners from that game. Very, very, very easily. Missed the penalty. Two came down off the bottom of the bar. One outrageously ruled out goal that should have stood. You know, we should have at least beat them 4. And it might have been a very, very, very different season if that had happened. It's fine margins in a way. And I think what basically happened was that, as Phil, you've said many times, you know, if you'd have hired, when everyone was saying sack Moyes at kind of Christmas time, if you'd have brought a manager in, he would have done it, you'd have brought a manager in to do exactly what Moyes has done in the second half of the season, which is go back to basics, pick your tried and trusted players, you know, play defensively and on try and hit teams on the counter, etc. So, you know,
I mean, he has been vindicated, and so have the owners. And you know, I was very much get Moyes out. We're finished with Moyes. This is disgraceful that the club would stay impatient with him. I said all those things, and you know, I guess I was wrong. Maybe I was right and wrong. So, but certainly, they've all been vindicated now.
Yeah.
We're probably going to have to wrap this up fairly soon, Sam. I know you've got to be somewhere, but we've got AZ Alkmaar tomorrow, isn't it? You know, they lie ahead, and probably you'd think Fiorentina after that, who are going well in Serie A. Them or it's Basel, isn't it?
Them or Basel.
There's a way to go, and we're starting to get to the business end of that. And this lot, this lot are not going to be a pushover. It's going to be hard.
I was just reading an analysis about their team. They're doing well. They're a very good passing team. They're possession-based. They're technically brilliant. And they kept 4 clean sheets in their last 4 games.
Yeah.
I think their last game was a 0-0 against Ajax at the weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Benji Lagnado was there and they defended really, really well. I mean, Ajax were in no danger of finding a way through. And we are a team that's finding it hard to score at the moment. In Europe, where we're sort of banging them in. Our last game, we scored 3. But I think this is going to be a lot harder. We've probably got to do it at home, you know.
Sort of
take a lead away with us. How do we think tomorrow will turn out?
I'm hoping that the crowd will make a big difference, because I think back to that extraordinary atmosphere, that Seville game.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt Seville. I think that place, when it's really properly up and loud, is an intimidating place to come and play.
It was noisy against Man U, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, second half, it was great.
It was. And I think it can be quite an intimidating. That kind of wall of people on that east side, you know, when they start making noise, you know, I'm hoping we're very, very, very loud, and they're a little bit overawed by it all. I think they see themselves as underdogs, we're the big boys in the Premier League. I hope it's a little bit intimidating for them, and I'm going to go for a 2-0 win.
2-0. Sam, what do you reckon?
You do a thing where you can't repeat the same score, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, we did.
I was going to say 2-0. I'll say 1-0 West Ham then.
Then I will go for 2-1. Right. Yeah, you know, I think they'll score. Yes, so, but very exciting. We all going?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm really looking forward to it, actually. Really,
yeah, me too.
I think it's going to be a great night.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been good these nights, you know.
Yeah.
It's you know, both last year and this year, they've had some really great nights there. Great. Well, this has been Stop Hammer Time. With me this week have been Jim Grant.
Cheerio.
And Sam Delaney.
All the best.
Come on, you Irons.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.